All right, Master Chair, we're recording and broadcasting out to the public. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Call the meeting to order. Good morning, members, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the regular meeting of the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board. My name is Pete Pumphrey, and I am the board chair. I want to thank you for listening to our meeting. We welcome your comments, ideas, and participation because they help us to do a better job. Today's board meeting is being conducted during the COVID-19 emergency, and this is a virtual board meeting. In order to comply with public gathering and physical distancing requirements in the governor's executive orders, there is no physical meeting room. Bob Lloyd with AGP Video is hosting our virtual board meeting. I will ask him to give us any instructions he thinks will help us run this meeting smoothly. Bob?
Thank you, sir. So right now, if you are a member of the public and we do see one person in, when comes to public comment, if you'd like to raise your hand to be recognized for public comment, or if you're calling in by phone, that would be a star nine. I think that's all I can give at this point, sir.
Thank you. We appreciate your patience and understanding during this extraordinary time. So if we muddle along a little bit, it's because we're not used to this either, but we're all trying to do the best we can under these circumstances. At this time, I would like to introduce the other members of the regional board attending via video and teleconferencing. Kimberly Cox from Hellendale, Keith Diaz from Rosamond, Dr. Amy Horn from Truckee, Don Jardine from Markleyville, and Eric Sandell from Truckee. Our executive staff are here today, including our acting executive officer, Mike Plaziak, our legal counsel, Elizabeth Barrett, and our board clerk, Sandra Lopez. We will also be joined by other staff members for individual agenda items. For people who wish to only listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary website is available. In addition, we are receiving presentations and public comment through a Zoom meeting platform. If you intend to present or comment, you should have submitted a virtual speaker card to our board clerk, Sandra Lopez, and be in the Zoom meeting room. This meeting is being webcasted and recorded, so please speak clearly. If you think you might be interested in commenting or are experiencing technical difficulties, please contact our board clerk promptly at lahontan@waterboards.ca.gov. For those in the Zoom meeting, your camera will be turned off and you will be on mute until it is your turn to speak. Our board clerk will unmute you when it is your turn to speak. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you will be placed on mute again. With that, we will go to our first agenda item, which is agendized as item number one, closed session. However, there is no closed session at today's meeting. Item two is public forum. Any person may address the water board regarding a matter within the water board's jurisdiction, which is not related to an item on this meeting agenda or currently pending before the water board. I don't have any advance notice of anyone wishing to participate in public forum. However, I will ask at this time if there is anyone who wishes to do so.
No, sir, not at this time.
Thank you. Item three are minutes of the regular meeting, adoption of the minutes of the regular meeting of the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board of June 10 and 11, 2020.
I'll make a motion. We approve the minutes. This is Keith.
I'll second that motion. This is
Been
Amy.
moved, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any comment or discussion? Ms. Cox?
No comments.
I'm also, I guess I'm asking for your vote as well.
Aye.
Mr. Diaz?
Aye.
Mr. Jardine?
Aye.
Dr. Horn?
Aye.
Mr. Sandell?
Aye.
And I vote aye as well. Thank you. Item four reports by board chair and board members, starting with board members. Ms. Cox, anything to report? I take that to mean no.
Oh, I'm sorry. Had you directed something to me?
I'm sorry. We're at board member reports, and I was wondering if you had any report to make.
No reports. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Diaz?
No report. Thank you.
Dr. Horn?
Yes, I have a report. I'd like to call the board's attention to a recent publication of the PPIC Water Policy Center titled Making the Most of Water for the Environment. And I will describe this a little bit. I've written up a one-page thing that I will ask the board clerk to share with board members after the meeting. So this report describes a functional flow approach to managing environmental water, which is defined as flows in rivers and streams necessary to sustain ecosystem health. So why should we care about functional flows? The main benefit of this approach is it would increase resilience in California's water management system, thereby contributing to the implementation of Governor Newsom's water resilient portfolio policy. Functional flows would increase certainty in water supplies by reducing the risk of new listings under the Endangered Species Act and further restrictions on water users. This approach makes water management more flexible because it provides opportunities for trading, selling, and storing water. It can improve water quality and make rivers and streams more fishable and swimmable. The trade-off for these benefits is likely less water than at present for human use in some places at some times. So what's wrong with the current approach? The current approach is flawed because it focuses on single species protected under the Endangered Species Act. It typically results in establishing static minimum flows for protected species or even for just a specific life stage of those species. Yet it doesn't work because species continue to decline in rivers with static flow requirements, which results in more restrictions on water users. Today, despite significant investments in environmental protections, about 80% of California's native species are in decline, including half of the salmon and steelhead species. In addition, the patchwork of laws and regulations is poorly coordinated and applied inconsistently, and many rivers have no protections at all. So how does the functional flow approach work? It's a more holistic approach designed to prevent triggering the ESA. All of California's freshwater species evolved under conditions of extreme variability in water flows, and they depend on that variation to sustain healthy assemblages of native species. This approach does not envision restoring historic flows. Rather, it focuses on preserving key functions such as sediment movement, water quality, and environmental cues for species migration and reproduction. The report discusses different approaches for dammed and undammed rivers, as well as implications for managing stormwater and treated wastewater in urban rivers. And I've included, so my write-up is a page long, and I've included a diagram of how functional flows could work. So you can see how it does not return to historic variability, but takes a little bit of water away and uses a little bit of water at specific times to support ecosystem processes. So I will share that after the meeting.
Thank you very much. Mr. Jardine?
Very few comments. Actually, I was looking forward to looking at this report on functional flows and how it interrelates with the Truckee River Operating Agreement and the Alpine Federal Court decree and interrelate with the Federal Water Master. But yep. I'll look forward to the report.
Great. And I've included links to make it easy for you to find it.
Thank you. That's it. Nothing more.
Mr. Sandell.
No report. Thanks.
I have one brief item and then another item, but I just want to remind you that the dates for WQCC for this year are October 27 and 28. It will be virtual. I'm not sure how exactly. There's discussion as to how it's going to be structured to try and keep in mind the not running afoul of the phenomenon of Zoom burnout after a certain length of time. So as soon as I have any additional information with respect to that, I will make sure I get it to you immediately. The other item that I had to raise at this point, as we all know, our former executive officer, Patty Kuyumjin, retired effective August 21st, if I remember correctly. And we do have a board resolution. I don't know if Patty is with us in any way other than in our thoughts. Is there a way to know that?
I don't see her on the list.
I don't see her either.
Yeah, I don't either.
Mike, I thought you had indicated you thought that she was going to try to join us.
Yes.
I wonder then if maybe we can push over this and bring it back a little bit later in today's meeting when she's actually with us.
Yeah, I'm going to send her a text and see what her schedule is, if she's able to jump on after all.
Why don't we then defer this? Let me give you a chance to do that, and then we'll just defer this and go to your report. Yes, ma'am.
I was wondering if we could have a report out of the results of yesterday's closed session.
In what sense?
Just, not going to details. I was thinking of something rather simple, just to let people know where we are in the process.
Well, we talked about putting together the job announcement, and we're going to make an announcement when that is going to be released. So that people who are interested in applying will be aware of the fact that it's out there.
Could I add a little bit to that? That we approved both the vacancy announcement and the duty statement, and now it is wending its way through Sacramento. So it's out of our hands, and we're hoping that it gets posted as soon as possible. That's all.
Let's move to item 5, Executive Officer's Report. Mr. Plasiak?
All right. I've just sent her a text. Good morning, board and board members and board chair. I'm Mike Plasiak, Acting Executive Officer. Today I will cover the standing items in my presentation. I'll provide you the key takeaways from the standing items. There's a couple other ones I'm going to bring up too. And then if there's any detailed questions, staff are available to answer those. After I'm finished with that, I'll turn it over to Scott Ferguson, who's going to talk about the violations report. So with that being said, I'm going to go in order, but except for the first item, I'm going to ask you to turn to page 5-68. Bate stamp 5-68, we'll talk about personnel matters. And so I want to talk about personnel first, because personnel, that is the engine that drives this whole organization. And as you've seen over the last few months, we've had vacancies that we've not filled, and we've also had a redirect or the dissolution of the cannabis unit, which has resulted in redirecting staff to some of those vacancies. So I'm going to talk about that just briefly. But one of the points I wanted to bring up is I understand that State Board yesterday in hearing was presented with the question about fees, increasing fees. And I understand that option B, I don't know the details of it yet, but it looks like fees were approved to be raised in certain cases to help with some of the hiring freeze. So we should see that. The details of that, though, aren't going to come out here for a few days after we get to work through the sausage making. But I understand that possibly, though, vacancies are not going to be filled, but some of the hiring that we've got in the wings will be allowed to be filled. So more on that later. I'm hoping that will help us, because one of the key positions that you'll see on that with the hiring is a regional monitoring coordinator. That's a senior environmental specialist position or scientist position. And so we're looking to see that be filled. Also, on the hiring, I just want to also talk about that while we're still working through the hiring freeze, we've also been dealing with COVID. As you know, we've got two staff that have been directed to help with that. So that has had an impact on resources in addition to the freeze. So those are the kind of the key takeaways on those two items with the personnel. I did want to talk just briefly about the cannabis unit with that being dissolved. So what we're going to see is on that DOD unit, engineering geologist, Emily Cushman's going to move into that position. So she'll be working with Bill Muir down in Victorville. TJ Middlemiss is going to be working with Jay in the wastewater ag unit. And Kathleen Bendel is going to be filling the vacancy that was left by Bruce Warden and the non-point source unit. So what that leaves us with is Alex Spencer and Carly Nilsson are our two designated cannabis staff. They'll continue to work on those issues. We're still waiting for State Board to give us some more guidance on exactly what their work is going to be. We've been told, you know, initially and kind of, you know, on an upper level, focus on enforcement half of the time, and the other half will be on getting enrollees into the program. But we are expecting to have more guidance on that at the September 28th DMC MCC meeting. So more to follow on that. But those two staff are going to be working in Scott Ferguson's division under Kathy Poole, who has three staff in her Leviathan unit. She'll be getting two more, and they'll be solely working on the cannabis work. So that's that on the personnel issues. With that being said, I'll go to the next item on Bate Stamp 5-8. And as you turn to that, this item is intended to give you a status report on all grazing activities in the region. So the key takeaway on that is, with respect to irrigated lands regulatory program, we know that the East San Joaquin decision of 2019 had an impact on irrigated lands regulatory programs throughout the state for monitoring and BMPs and other things that need to be updated or revised in those programs. We don't have one. I think we're the only region in the state that doesn't have irrigated lands regulatory program, if among the few, or if not the only one. So our concern was that moving forward that we needed to have one. We needed to bring one into being here in Region 6. We've since contacted State Board, and we've confirmed that we do not. So we're going to bring to you what our regulatory strategy is going to look like at our November board meeting. So you will see that. But just so you know that we're not required, because of that San Joaquin decision, we thought possibly that was a catalyst for us to have to move forward developing that program. We do not. But what it does mean is that those waivers that we do have in effect that cover those kinds of land use practices or discharge practices are going to have to be revised. So to that end, we know that the Bridgeport Valley waiver is up for renewal in 2022. So we'll be working on it next year, and we'll incorporate those updates from that San Joaquin decision into that order going forward. On a positive note, with respect to Eagle Lake, our observations are that there's progress on compliance. All the reports have been coming in, and water quality monitoring is ongoing. So that's a positive thing. Lastly, I want to talk about LADWP, because in the south, they're a major landholder there. And they've got over 50 grazing leases in effect. But we know that we've got some problems with nutrients, bacteria, and turbidity in a couple of creeks, and Bishop Creek being one of the main ones that we're concerned about. So we're looking at focusing on Bishop Creek and what we can do with that. Staff is coming together to look at something that's it's akin to like a TMDL, but it isn't. It's an alternative that will help us to achieve the regulatory goals that we have with LADWP. So we've got some work to do with LADWP going forward, and I expect that we'll have this Bishop Creek Vision Project solidified somewhere during the middle of next year. So that's the movement we're going on right now. And one of the things that I want to say with that, I know when we're talking about priorities and standing items in the past, we looked at those prior to COVID and prior to some of these staffing shortfalls in a certain lens. And now we've got these shortfalls that we've got to incorporate into our work plans. And that is one thing that I'm looking at right now across the board, is seeing how the work plans are going to support the continuance of some of these items. And some of these may have to go on a back burner. And I've talked to the board about, you know, resources in the past, but that's something I'm looking at. I've gotten with all the division managers to look at the current work plans and see how we're doing. So I'm expecting to get a little bit more granularity on the work plans and developing plan forward on some of these major items. Are there any questions on that before I go on to the next item? Okay, hearing none. I'm going to continue on, and if anybody wants to interrupt me, that's probably going to be the best way to go forward and do this, as opposed to just stopping at each one. So I'd ask you to turn to item 8, which is on bait stamp 5-17, and that is the Leviathan mine. And there's three key takeaways that I want to give you with respect to Leviathan mine. The first is, as you know, that Leviathan mine is falling through a CERCLA process, and the remedial investigation feasibility, the RIFS process, is ongoing. What does that mean? It means site characterization is a lengthy process. As you know, this has been something that's been in effect for over a decade now. One of the things that staff is still working through with ARCO and EPA is establishing reference threshold values, reference stream. They've yet to select one of those, and establishing a conceptual groundwater model. What does that mean? Well, those are the things that we'll need to be able to monitor progress on cleanup, establishing that baseline. So that process is still ongoing. The good news is, with respect to the early final remedial action, or EFRA, that's a way to get at the problem that still exists and is affecting water quality today. And that is on a good trajectory right now. There's a pilot scale treatability project that's ongoing. We'll end this month, and we'll get a report in January. It will tell us whether or not the cleanup options that are proposed at the pilot scale can expand to the larger scale. this is something that's good because right now that is going to be used year round and to treat year round, to capture year round, treat year round acid mine drainage from five different stream sources. So that's going right to the problem and attacking it first off. Meanwhile, concurrently, all the RIFS process will still go on. The last thing I want to update you on is that there are maintenance activities that are ongoing, and those maintenance activities are through contract with DGS, as contracted with Spectrum Services Group, and we will expect to see this month and into the summer, or the beginning of the fall here, actually, pond water treatment system supposed to be, or we're expecting to be completed this month. And then some site improvements at Pond 3. That includes road improvements and also a concrete pad for the treatment of equipment or treatment equipment. So those are ongoing. Some of those systems have been in place for years and need that maintenance. I can have you turn to page 5-46. We can talk about the triennial review. That's also affected by resources as well. But if you'll notice the priority table on bait stamp 5-47. So there are 19 projects on this triennial review, but 10 of these, or actually 11 of these, are on the table that we're looking at putting resources towards. And I just want to update you on item number one, evaluating the bacteria water quality objective. Staff has done an awesome job on moving that forward, developed a video, very informational, well done video. I think some staff have career opportunities other places if they were to pursue that, but good job on the video. That was posted for the public to see. And then that was in July. In August, we had a public meeting to talk about the elements of this particular regulatory action and the bacteria water quality objectives. What are these bacteria water quality objectives? What are we trying to achieve? The public forum was met with, or public meeting was met with lots of good responses. The next step, though, will be to bring what we found to the board, and staff's evaluating that. So you will see this in November with our recommendations and the options that are available to us. So that's one that I wanted to bring to your attention on this list. Another one I'll bring to your attention is removing item number seven, removing the Lake Tahoe prohibitions on new pier construction. That's completed. OAL approved that in October 2019. And then number eight, the tribal beneficial uses, you will see that today, subsequent to my presentation here. So the others, 2 through 6, 9 and 10, still they're on hold. And I think we're slowed down because staff have been redirected by COVID to do contact tracing. So we've got those on hold, but I just want to at least bring up to your attention that there are some that have moved along and in a positive direction. So next I'll go on to item 5 on Tahoe Keys Aquatic Weed Control. That's on bait stamp 5-74. And this item outlines a regulatory approach to allow an aquatic pesticide to be applied at the pilot scale to Tahoe Keys in conjunction with other non-chemical means. Now, this is not a standing item, but I'm bringing this up to you because we are looking at right now, the staff here, we're evaluating how we can have a public meeting, because this is a complex issue. It's got a lot of regulatory considerations involved in it, and we feel very strongly that getting this out to the public forum for people to know what we're doing, for us to be transparent, is so important. So with that being said, we're looking at trying to fit a public meeting into the November meeting. Whether it's going to be concurrent with the actual board meeting or a separate one, we've yet to determine yet, but that should be coming shortly. But I wanted to bring this up to you. I'm sure the board members are aware of this item as it's starting to percolate upwards, but this is a joint permitting action between Lahontan and TRPA, Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. TRPA is the lead NEPA organization and has put together an EIS. Lahontan is the lead CEQA entity, and we have an EIR. So this EIS/EIR has been out for public comment. The comment period ended September 3rd. And we're working through those public comments now. I think that is all I wanted to talk about on that item, other than our expectation is to get public comments in November, or not public comments, but have this as a briefing in November. And then in March, have the item, and the item is going to be an MPDS permit, adoption of the EIR, and lastly, a basin plan prohibition exemption. So those are the three things that would be teed up for March. Going on to item number six, and that is a cannabis program update on bait stamp 5-75. With that one, the Eastern California Regional Cannabis Unit is effectively been disbanded, as I mentioned before. So we've lost three PYs. And what I wanted to let you all know is the work that's been done by that unit for not just Region 6, but also Region 7. So this has been a Herculean effort. And I think that it's important to bring this up to the board that through that time when the unit was in existence and led by Eric Taxer, who is now retired and moved up to Portland, Oregon, three ACLs were completed in Region 7, and those ACLs totaled combined over 600,000 in penalties, and all three are being settled or going through the settlement negotiations as we speak. Sampling procedures were established as well, and those are established at regulated indoor sites. And in Region 6, we've got two CAOs and one ACL in the hopper, and I think that the staff, as they're doing the redirect, are going to continue to work on closing up some of those loose ends. And I've asked staff to make that transition by September 22nd, knowing that if there are some loose ends, some follow-on actions with some of these enforcement items, we have been told that we have the ability to charge to cannabis funding going forward if there are some holdover items. But and I talk about items that are beyond the ability of the two cannabis staff to work on. So, you know, we've got a transition to go through, and I think that certainly the folks that are going to be receiving those staff and the redirect are going to be looking forward to that, to be able to build that capacity to move their programs forward in DOD and wastewater and ag, and also non-point source. So, it's a double-edged sword if you look at it that way. I want to talk about another, I think, a positive thing. And this one is on item 7 on bait stamp 5-76. And this is the establishment, this is news that there has been establishment of a new joint powers authority. And that was formed in Bishop on June 30th, 2020, between the City of Bishop and the Eastern Sierra Community Services District. And Walt Pachuki is now elected as the first chair of the BAWA. I'm just from having worked down in the southern part of our region and worked with Walt and both entities, it's encouraging to see this has actually come to fruition. In the many years that I've worked with them, that they finally have made this joint effort, and it's good. One thing I did want to clarify on that, though, is the joint effort right now results in a single location for effluent to be discharged. That's the one thing I want to clarify for what's in the item there. All the other things are still separate. And they may go to becoming joint, but if that is to happen, that'll be at some point down in the future. And what I'm talking about are the collection services, the treatment facilities. Those things are still separate entities underneath each respective entity, but their combined discharge is going to the same location. And the good news on that is they've acquired more land from LADWP, so over 400 acres, which was going to mean, and they're going to use irrigation practices that are going to allow water be applied at the agronomic rate. And so we should see an improvement in water quality with respect to nitrates as they go forward. So this is a good thing for water quality as well as a good thing for both of those entities to form that joint powers authority. So I'm encouraged to see that after so many years. I'm glad that Walt Spano will pull that together. We go on now to LACSD 20, item 14, which is on page bait stamp 5-91. And this item has been a standing item since I was a unit supervisor down in Victorville. I was looking through the plume map, and the good news on that is that the hotspot extraction system has been working. And we're seeing that nitrate values have been coming down. So this is definitely good to see this project over time, you know, result in improving water quality. And it looks like to date, they removed 2,200 tons of nitrate azen, which is significant. And that is a good achievement. The bad news, though, is that groundwater decline due to pumping, not just from the groundwater extraction system, but also municipal demand in that area, have brought the water table down 2 to 6 feet per year. So that's a significant drop that is occurring there. So, you know, those are things that LACSD certainly is factoring in. To that end, they're installing two new monitoring wells. They've lost some of their monitoring capability because of the groundwater decline. So two new monitoring wells are going to be installed in the near future, and they're also investigating storage capabilities, increasing their storage when they can't apply that effluent at the agronomic rate during the wintertime when the demand is low. So they're looking into that as well. But I think one of the other things that I wanted to bring up here is that the facility upgrades are producing a better effluent. So that's another improvement, that their nitrogen, the total nitrogen concentrations are less than 10 in the effluent. So I think that LACSD is made a significant improvement in that direction. The last thing I want to bring up to the board, and it's a standing item, but it's not in your board packet. It didn't get in there as an item, an EO item. That's just a status update on the Barstow Plecori. And there's just a couple of items just to update you on that. So the groundwater pollution, the perchlorate pollution problem is being addressed by a consultant, APTIM, and they are working on doing a focused feasibility study and a remedial design work plan. So that's good news to see that is ongoing right now. Also ongoing, groundwater sampling. And we did our last round of groundwater sampling was this month. Prior to that, we had done some sampling in January. We did do a sampling round in July. However, the lab errors invalidated the entire sampling regimen. So we did between 20 and 25 samples, and those were lost. So that's a lot of staff resources and time lost to no effect. And so we're working through that issue with the lab. But staff is going out this month to do another round of sampling, and then we'll be going out next month. So ongoing monitoring is continuing. And lastly, the bottled water is being supplied to 6 homes, and that contract is still in effect and will be until 2023. So that's the news on what's going on with the Barstow Perchlorate. And that concludes my portion of the brief. Are there any questions on any items that I've talked about? It Looks like Dr. Horn has a question.
Yes, he does.
I didn't know if I was in control of my own muting. Just a couple of comments and questions. Well, first, on the SWAMP program on bait stamp 572, I was just wondering, you know, there's a Buddhist saying, you can never step in the same river twice. And that kind of applies to water sampling water quality, because, you know, the chemistry and all that changes continuously. And it seems to me that the bioassessment monitoring is a more holistic way of looking at the health of a watershed, the water quality, because species, if the water quality is poor, then the species can't live there. And I'm wondering if there's a way of, I mean, I guess that water quality monitoring is still required, or chemistry is still required, but to the extent that we can move over to doing more bioassessment monitoring, I didn't know if that's possible to put more resources towards bioassessment and fewer resources towards chemistry, et cetera.
That's a great question, Dr. Horn. I don't know if Ben, can you add to that?
Yeah, Amy, this is Ben. Sorry if I have some background noise. Yeah, Dan and I have discussed that. I think that part of the what makes this switch challenging is that, you know, we have a longstanding data set through with SWAMP with 20 plus years of continuous data for some constituents. So we want to maintain that continuous data set, you know, because it shows long-term trends. At the same time, recognizing that SWAMP or bioassessment, excuse me, can provide some really valuable perspective on stream health. So your comment is noted. We do discuss that pretty regularly internally. I didn't know if Dan wanted to add anything.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. You definitely hit a good part of why we are planning on continuing with the chemical stuff, the chemical analytes for conventional sampling. And recall that a lot of the data that we use for assessing our waters against our water quality objectives in the integrated report, it come from our SWAMP work. To get a little bit more specific than into the implementation plan and relating, well, what is the conventional sampling that we should do, and should we update our sampling plan, and how does bioassessment fit into that, and also can we find any, can we learn anything from the past 20 years of the data that we have? We're currently under contract with a group at SFEI/Aquatic Science Center. They're sort of the same group with two different names, but to get sort of a third party look at all of that data and our monitoring and sampling, our monitoring questions, and to dive in and sort of do an assessment for us and come up with some recommendations. And then at the same time, as is mentioned in this EO report, we're working with our partners at Department of Fish and Game, and I want to say another one of our partner agencies through SWAMP to do an assessment of all our bioassessment data, and then that report will sort of be be incorporated and looked at by the SFEI group as well. And so when we get those reports out, they'll have some recommendations for us and some things to consider for what we can do moving forward and how much and of what kind, at what frequency and what locations of different sorts of monitoring we should use SWAMP for, be that the long-term monitoring, be that a different cycle of monitoring, or be that using bioassessment more. The nature of our current bioassessment data, unlike that of our conventional data, is really focused in the middle of the Sierra, from, you know, Truckee down to, I don't know, maybe Bishop area, a little bit south of there. We have less data, though we do have some up in our far north and far south areas. So that's one of our challenges in this assessment. But yeah, we the SFEI contract just has started recently. And so I'd be happy to talk to you when I have the timeline in front of me and tell you when we expect to get a little bit more. But we're also, our swamp coordinator, Kelly, and myself are going to be part of conversations along the way with that group.
Great. That's great news. I'm glad to hear you guys are working on it.
Excuse the interruption. Just for the record and for those watching, Dan and Ben, can you introduce yourselves?
Yeah, my name is Dan Sessman. I'm the senior environmental scientist in charge of the planning and assessment unit, which includes the swamp program.
My name is Ben Lett, and I'm a supervising engineering geologist, division manager of the compliance and planning division in South Lake Tahoe.
And then I have just a few more comments. One on bait stamp 585, I was really glad to see this. It has to do with the former George Air Force Base that the Air Force has recently agreed to install 4 monitoring plant wells on that TCE plume. So it's good to know that we're getting a handle, that we will be getting a handle on that. I was thrilled to get the update on the Palmdale plume. That was the first big item I dealt with when I came on the board. And I'm glad to get an update on it because we don't often hear much about that. And I'm glad to hear things are moving along with the Barstow perchlorate plume as well. So those are my comments.
Thank you.
Any other comments from any other board members? Ms. Cox?
No comments. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Diaz?
No comments. Thank you.
Mr. Jardine?
No comments.
Mr. Sandell?
Generally, no comments, but one question. In Bishop, that 400 new acres for disposal, are they not going to need something for storage in the winter when they can't use land for disposal, or do they have adequate now?
Yeah, I believe they do have some storage, but I don't think it's adequate right now. So, but I don't know if is Jay on? No, he's not. Patrice is probably busy right now, but I can get you an answer to that.
Sometime. Thank you.
I have no other questions. Thank you.
Do you want me to introduce the next item?
Yes, please.
All right. I'll be glad to do that. And our next item is on tribal beneficial uses, item number 6. And
excuse me, Mike, just one thing. Sorry to interrupt. Did you want to go over the quarterly violations report right now?
Yeah, that was the next thing. Scott, thank you for keeping me on track.
Okay.
Just to clarify for the record, this is still under item number 5, the EO report.
Yep, violations report. Thanks, Scott.
I'll take it from here. My name's, good morning, board chair and members of the board. My name is Scott Ferguson. I'm a supervising water resource control engineer. And just want to bring you up to date on our quarterly violations report for the first quarter of 2020. It's captured in your July EO's report. It starts on bait stamp 5-24. Just one item that I'd like to follow up on. In the narrative, the synopsis of our violations, it discusses some differences between the number of violations that we saw for the first quarter of 2020 and compares it to the previous year, the first quarter of 2019. And it highlights how we saw quite a few flow violations related to the Crestline wastewater treatment and collection system. And there's an excellent article, EO's article, in your September EO's report, article number 9 on 5-82. And this provides a lot of background information and highlights what the district is doing to follow up with this. And we're handling these violations under informal enforcement through a notice of violation and getting excellent cooperation out of the Crestline Sanitation District. That's made some significant progress in assessing their system, adding additional monitoring, both weather and systems monitoring, to identify other areas where they need to work. This past year, they identified several sections of sewer main that had issues, had collapsed and was allowing groundwater to get in, adding to inflow infiltration. And then they also plan on focusing on manhole rehabilitation this current fiscal year, again, in the effort to reduce inflow infiltration, which has been the root cause of those high effluent flow limitation violations that we saw a year ago. For the rest of what I'd like to focus the rest of my time on and your attention to is we've made some significant progress in the enforcement program on a number of different efforts. If you turn your attention to bait stamp 5-27, it's attachment B in pending enforcement cases. Now, this was put together back in middle of June of this year. So there's been quite a bit of progress on a number of those items. Draw your attention to the Tahoe Donner Association Equestrian Center. We did get the rescission order for a cleanup and abatement order that resulted in relocating corrals out of wetland and floodplain habitat in some of the headwaters of the Truckee River system. That got completed and the rescission order was sent out this past August. You heard Mike mention some work in the cannabis program. We did issue in June a cleanup and abatement order to William Goldberg. So we're following up on that. And also there's another one that's, that we've made some progress on. That's the Avila CAO, or cleanup and abatement order. That was put out there for public comment. The advisory team did release some comments or issue some comments and questions back in middle August. And about a week ago, prosecution team responded, so we're thinking a final decision is pending on that one. If you turn your, moving to the bait stamp 5-28, there's one there for VVWRA, or Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Agency, and this is mandatory minimum penalties. I just wanted to report to you we're close to releasing a proposed settlement for a 30-day public comment period on that one. And then the one below that is Susanville Sanitary District, again, a mandatory minimum penalty case. And in this one, we have released a proposed settlement for a 30-day public comment period. That went out on September 3rd, and the comment period will close on October 5th. And then we'll see if that one is one where either it may come before you for a final decision, or your executive officer also has the authority to settle on your behalf. So those are some of the recent progress that we've been making. That progress has been a result of staff being able to focus on, focus his attention on some of these that have been languishing, and also it has been through an effort to, from our assistance, technical assistance, from the Office of Enforcement, and that has allowed us to make significant progress on a number of other these cases and other cases. So I've really seen an uptick since last time I came before you, which was in May, and we're starting to see a refocused emphasis on our enforcement program with the technical assistance from the Office of Enforcement starting to pay dividends. And you'll see that continue throughout this upcoming year and into 2021. That's all I had. If you have any questions, more than interested or willing to answer them.
Any questions? I can see three of the board members. So let me start with the ones I can't. Mr. Dias?
No questions, thank you.
Mr. Sandell?
I had one question, which was on the West Walker River near Colville, Mono County. There's nobody actually listed there as the focus of the investigation. Who is responsible? Do we not know?
We do. Could you repeat that one?
There's the last thing on attachment B is a facility West Walker River near Colville. It's an ACL complaint, but you don't actually list a party. Oh. I assume it's not the county, but it's just a stretch on the river.
It is a the person that's there's a the property owner and the party that manages the property. That's who's responsible for the violations.
Okay. Ah.
And for that case.
Okay, and thanks for your attention to the is it Crestline?
Yes,
they've been the subject of board attention, I think, ever since I've been on the board, almost. And so I'm hoping you're going to help them clean up their act once and for all.
And I don't see any hands waving from the board members I can see. So thank you very much, Mr. Ferguson. Nice report. Thank you.
Thank you.
I believe that concludes item 5. Please correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Plaziak.
You are correct, Board Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Dias, I saw your square light up. I'm not sure if you...
No comments, thank you.
Oh, okay. This is fascinating. I love you all to begin with, but I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to the chance that we might be able to see one another together in person. Item 6, the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, Lahontan Region, is holding a public hearing today to consider adopting a resolution to approve an amendment to the Water Quality Control Plan for the Lahontan Region to add definitions for 3 new beneficial uses: tribal tradition and culture, tribal subsistence fishing, and subsistence fishing. This hearing will not be conducted according to the technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any testimony that is reasonably relevant to the matter under consideration. The chair may impose reasonable time limits or may require groups to choose a single spokesperson. As a reminder, if you intend to comment in this hearing, you should already be in the Zoom meeting room. For those in the meeting room, your camera will be turned off and you will be on mute until it is your turn to speak. Board staff will unmute you when it is your turn to speak. Please begin by stating your name and whom you represent. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you will be placed on mute again. The order of presentation for this hearing is first, staff presentation, second, call for public comment. We would then close the hearing and proceed to deliberation and voting by the board. And although it's not mentioned, there will, of course, be opportunity for board questions to anyone who makes a presentation as part of this item. So, staff presentation, please.
All right. This will be presented by Cindy Wise, and I'll turn that over to her.
Okay. Thank you. And I'll ask that the presentation get queued up, please. That is not the presentation. That is our end of the presentation.
That's all we have for item six on this. I just stopped sharing it.
Board members have it on paper.
And I also, I believe I emailed you yesterday with the presentation at the same time that I sent that one slide presentation.
I'm looking for it. I don't see it. Sandra, could you send that to me again if possible, please?
Pete, if you like, this might take 5 minutes.
I was just going to suggest that we take a quick recess. How about 10 minutes from now, which by my watch, which is not totally accurate, would be about a quarter after. And then we will reconvene and hopefully we'll be all set to go.
All right.
Thank you all.
Mike, do you have that presentation by chance?
I do not.
Okay.
Bob, Cindy, if you could just resend it to Bob, I think that would probably be the easiest way.
I sent it to him already.
Oh, great. Thanks, Sandra.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so and then it also, it begins on Bates stamp 6-33, if that helps at all.
You know what, Cindy? I'm looking at what you sent him yesterday, and it's this item six. It starts enclosure bait stamp 6-8. Is that correct? I think it's the wrong thing was sent. Let me get the.
Yeah, it's just a single file that you're describing.
To put us up live?
Pete, I think you mentioned that you might be coming back at a quarter after, and my clock says 10:11. Would want to confirm if the board members are back at their desks or not.
Right. I understand that. My screen is full of the presentation, so I have no way to see where the board members are.
We apologize for that. We were just making sure that PowerPoint was correct. We'll stop sharing screen at this point.
It's not a problem.
Hi, Patty. It's good to see you.
Folks, I do want to remind you, I'm sorry we kind of jumped the gun here and started the recording process. So if we could... hold off on public issues, that'd be great.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are up and recording and streaming out to the world. Mr. Chair, the floor is yours.
It looks like I'm waiting for Ms. Cox. Are you with us, Kimberly? Does not seem to be. So we need a couple more minutes, probably.
All right, sir. We're going to put everything back into the
case.
All right, sir. We're going to start everything back up from recording.
Why don't we do that?
And we are thumbs up. Mr. Chair, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Before we move to item six on the agenda, to the actual hearing, we have been joined by our former executive officer, Ms. Kuyumjin, and we're very pleased that that's true. We wanted to have you with us for part of today's meeting so that we could, in a sort of formal way, express our appreciation to you for the work that you have done for us for 8 years. Probably seemed at times to you like it was 80, but we very much appreciate what you've done. We have a resolution, but before I go to reading that resolution, I'd like to ask the board members if they'd like individually to say anything at this point. Mr. Diaz?
Before the board members begin, I just wanted for the record to identify that this is being spoken under item 4, reports from board members.
Thank you. Mr. Diaz, do we have you back?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Patty, I want you to know that I'm extremely sorry that you have decided to leave the board, but I want to thank you for the 8 years of service that you did provide us. I especially want to point out how I appreciate the support you provided for the new Fremont Basin Integrated Regional Water Management Group, both in by sending Lahontan staff to their meetings, and also in their request for support in acquiring funds, grant funds. You gave us letters of support, and that was very important in the early stages. You're the finest executive officer that I have had the pleasure to serve with, and I wish you great joy and happiness in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Horn?
Wow, Keith speaks. That's the most you've said in a long time, Keith. That was great, and I second everything Keith said. We've gotten a lot of great work done over the last 8 years. I've enjoyed working with you, Patty, and I'm glad to hear you're having fun tackling the garage and other things. It always feels good to get those projects done behind you, finally. So good to see you.
You're on mute, Board Chair.
And I am muted. Mr. Jardine?
I just totally support what Keith and Amy have just said. It's been such a joy working with her and with Patty, and it's I just can't express enough my thanks, and just pray you everything goes well for you from here on out. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Sandell.
Nice coming at the end. And I can just say I'm with everybody on this. Has it really been 8 years? It's just flown by. Good luck, Patty. I hope that everything goes really well, incredibly well for you.
Thank you. I, of course, would echo the comments, particularly the comment regarding your support of the local integrated regional planning people. That assistance has been extremely important to the Inyomono group. I think it's really important for those kinds of smaller agencies to have a contact, a lifeline, as it were, to the larger structures of state institutions. So that was greatly, greatly appreciated. And it's just one of many things, which I'll now speak to. We have a resolution by the board, which reads, whereas Patty Kuyumjin has been a remarkable leader, mentor, co-worker, and wonderful friend to many throughout her entire state government career. Patty retired in August 2020 after a 36-year career in California state government, working for the State Water Resources Control Board, California Environmental Protection Agency, and finally serving as the executive officer of the Lahontan Water Board since the year 2012. Whereas Patty was known for her great knowledge of all things related to policy and the legislature and applied that knowledge to all things related to the Water Board. Her strategy was to look at the big picture, find ways to improve how and what we did, and to approach issues with her characteristic, be more clever by a margin thinking, in our efforts to improve water quality for the entire region. Above all, she was known as a caring and compassionate person. Whereas Patty graduated from Sacramento State University with a bachelor's degree in government and a concentration in public health microbiology. Patty was first hired as a legislative analyst with the State Water Board. She has served as Deputy Secretary for Policy and Legislation at Cal EPA in Sacramento. In addition, Patty was the Cal EPA Assistant Secretary for Legislation for more than 13 years of her career and had the opportunity to work on Governor Schwarzenegger's climate change summits and work with celebrities and world leaders on multimedia extravaganzas to the wilds of the Amazon. Whereas Patty was appointed as the executive officer of the Lahontan Water Board in May 2020, in March 2012, in March 2013, Patty pioneered the first ever priorities and accomplishments addition to the board agenda to acknowledge the fine work the organization had accomplished during the previous year. During the same time, Patty oversaw the evaluation and renovation of the Water Board's enforcement program, resulting in well-defined program objectives, hearing procedures, and public participation fact sheets for ACLs and CDOs. An inclusive and more efficient supplemental environmental project program and multiple other program improvements that continue to be implemented today. Gaining Water Board acceptance of the Environmental Justice Program implementation plan for the Lahontan region, which was adopted in January 2015. Whereas Patty's leadership provided forward progress in the Pacific Gas and Electric Hinkley Compressor Station's chromium cleanup project and successfully secured funding from the USGS to conduct a background study in 2013 of chromium levels throughout the Hinkley area. Whereas during 2015 to 2016, Patty achieved 99.9% compliance with the Eagle Lake on-site wastewater treatment system discharge prohibition by having Spalding Tract residents connect to the community sewer system and or properly abandoned on-site wastewater treatment systems. Whereas Patty instituted a series of Water Board Court Regulatory Review Programs, USTs, WDR Wastewaters, Swamp, Land Disposal, Enforcement, and Leviathan Mine, and program workshops to evaluate existing programs, identify challenges, and update program goals, objectives, priorities, and strategies. Whereas in 2016, Patty's leadership secured an award of $2.67 million for further investigation and design of a cleanup system for the Barstow perchlorate plume from the State Water Board's site cleanup subaccount program and obtaining state funding to provide bottled water to impacted disadvantaged community members. Whereas in 2019, Patty was also instrumental in obtaining our region's award of $4.6 million grant from SCAP to investigate the trichloroethylene groundwater contamination affecting three water purveyors in the South Y area of South Lake Tahoe. Whereas Patty continued Water Board compliance at the Leviathan Mine Superfund site with US EPA orders for treating acid mine drainage, including the 2017 field season when a record 26 million gallons of AMD was treated between the first week of March and early October. Whereas Patty helped initiate Water Board climate change strategy efforts in 2014 with a series of public stakeholder meetings held throughout the region. This effort culminated in the adoption of the Climate Change Adaptation and Mitigation Strategy in November of 2019. Whereas Patty was actively engaged with staff in remediation efforts at the Department of Defense facilities, including the DOD, to be held to the same, insisting rather that the DOD be held to the same standards that apply to the private sector. Patty led our efforts to develop a monitored natural attenuation policy wherein cleanup must take no longer than a person's working lifetime, and other criteria must be met. And the Water Board accepted the final report on MNA evaluation application in the Lahontan region. Whereas Patty endorsed the Navy partnering approach to empower staff to engage in a joint effort to work through cleanup issues with the Department of the Navy and the Department of Toxic Substances Control at the China Lake Naval Air Weapons Station. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Lahontan Water Board extends its appreciation for Patty's true dedication to protect the waters of the United States and the waters of the state, as well as the health of our citizens throughout this most beautiful of regions. And be it further resolved that the Lahontan Water Board wishes for health, happiness, and fulfillment to Patty, her husband, Rafi, their children, Matthew, Nicole, and David, and their Dalmatians. May Patty always be active in the great state of California, volunteering in her community where and how she can, continuing to work to enjoy Lake Tahoe, Mono Lake, and all of the waters in our region that she worked so hard to protect. So that's a very long-winded way of saying, without your help, there is so much work that we would not have accomplished, and so much work that we are proud of, that you were the leader of the efforts to make come to fruition. Thank you so much. We miss you already. We will miss you more, I know, in coming times, although your shoes, you'll be happy to know, are being quite ably filled by Mr. Plasiak as acting executive officer. Patty, thank you for your help. Thank you for your inspiration. Thank you for you.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Chairman Pumphrey and board members, and especially all of our wonderful staff. You know, you said it seemed like 8 years sometimes, but it seemed like 1 year at times too. It seemed like I just started there. I've enjoyed every moment being there, working on these important projects with staff and the community. It's the most beautiful region in the state. I mean, you all know that, you know, and there's some wonderful, wonderful communities and stakeholders and others. And, you know, it's been a joy for me to be able to work on these projects with the help of all the talented staff that made all these things happen. And the great community members that we form partnerships with that I think are very strong bonds. And I hope we continue to build those bonds and keep them strong and keep the most beautiful region in the state beautiful. As I've always said, we have more sparkly clean waters than anyone else. And that's something to be celebrated and enjoyed. So I thank the board for working with me and the staff to make all these things happen. It's definitely a team effort. I do miss everyone, you know. I report retirement is wonderful. to have all the extra free time with your family and friends. So for those that haven't experienced it, I highly recommend it. And hope that someday, you know, our paths will cross and I'll be doing something else that I get a chance to work with all of you again. I started my career out of college at the Water Board. When this crazy idea of regulating underground storage tanks started. And I ended my career at the Water Board. What a wonderful, I couldn't have asked for anything better. And I thank again all of you. I'm humbled by what you've said and it's touched me deeply. It's just emotional to see all of you here. So I just can't say thank you enough.
Thank you, Patty. Thank you so much for your service. Have a good time.
I will. You know, although cleaning the garage is not that much of a good time, but I'll be going back to that. I thank again everyone, and I know you have some important issues to discuss, and wish you all the best.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay. Go back to item six and call again the hearing to order and ask for a presentation by the staff.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everyone. I am Cindy Wise on staff with the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board, and I will be talking about item six, which is Bates Stamp 6-1 on today's agenda. Chairman Pumphrey and members of the board, this morning I will be asking you to consider adopting an amendment to our basin plan to add three new beneficial uses that recognize and protect the cultural practices, traditional uses of water, and subsistence fishing by California Native American tribes and subsistence fishing by other communities and individuals. Next slide, please. First, I will give you some background leading up to the amendment. Then I'll explain the three new beneficial uses. Next, I'll summarize our outreach and public comments. And then I will conclude with staff's recommendation, which is to adopt the proposed basin plan amendment. Next slide, please. Starting in 2013, the State Water Resources Control Board began a process to engage with a group of 12 tribes and organizations to learn more about the unique traditions and practices, including subsistence fishing, with the goal to develop language for creating tribal and cultural beneficial uses. The State Water Board also sought input from environmental justice representatives to learn more about the need for a beneficial use category specific for subsistence fishing by other cultures or individuals that related to their cultural customs, economic circumstances, or both. In 2016, with its resolution 2016-11, the State Water Board directed its staff to develop language for the new beneficial uses that focused on tribal cultural practices and subsistence fishing. In 2017, with resolution 2017-27, the State Water Board included the new uses when it adopted its plan called Part 2 of the Water Quality Control Plan for Inland Surface Waters in Closed Bays and Estuaries of California, Tribal and Subsistence Fishing Beneficial Uses and Mercury Provisions. That plan title is a mouthful, so I'll be calling it Part 2 of the Inland Plan. Part 2 of the Inland Plan stipulates that the regional water boards use the definitions for the new beneficial uses in their own basin plans after June of 2017, but it did not require the regional water boards to designate specific waters within the regions with those new uses, nor did it set a prioritization schedule for the designations to occur. It did state that the regional water boards generally consider prioritizing the designation of the beneficial uses during their triennial review processes. And of course, the triennial review is the required periodic review of water quality control plans that happens every 3 years. Then in Lahontan's 2018 triennial review, the board included as a priority project adding the three new beneficial uses to our basin plan and to engage with tribes to identify waters that support those uses. This priority was well supported by many tribes and tribal organizations in our region, and the proposed basin plan amendment that you're considering this morning will accomplish part of that priority. Since 2019, we've been coordinating with other regional boards and state and the state board staff in a working group that is focused on developing the best process to add these new beneficial uses and designate waters with the uses. We want consistency in the process across all the regions where it makes sense, especially since many tribes' current or ancestral lands share regional board geographic boundaries. Next slide, please. So that all of our listeners have a common understanding, we wanted to briefly describe what is in a basin plan before talking about how we want to amend it. A statewide water quality control plan or regional water quality control plans or basin plans provide the foundation for all of the water board's regulatory actions. The basin plans identify beneficial uses of surface and groundwaters, water quality objectives to protect those uses, implementation actions to achieve the objectives, and a monitoring program to assess the plan's effectiveness. They contain the enforceable water quality standards designed to ensure that the beneficial uses of California's waters are protected. Next slide, please. Chapter 2 of our basin plan, titled Beneficial Uses, defines and designates the beneficial uses for surface and groundwaters in the region. Currently, we have 22 beneficial uses in the basin plan, which include commercial and sport fishing, abbreviated as COM. And this is for waters to protect waters for commercial or recreational collection of fish or other organisms intended for human consumption. So that includes anglers, sport fishing uses in that beneficial use. There's also several beneficial uses that are intended to protect fish and aquatic habitats. These include fish spawning, abbreviated as SPWN, migration of aquatic organisms, or MIGR, aquaculture, or aqua, warm freshwater habitat, and cold freshwater habitat. Next slide, please. The three new beneficial uses we're considering this morning are tribal tradition and culture, abbreviated as CUL, tribal subsistence fishing, abbreviated as TSUB, and subsistence fishing, abbreviated as SUB. The definitions are unchanged from those that are included in the State Board's Part 2 Inland Plan. And these three new uses are not intended to duplicate the existing beneficial uses that I just described that are intending to protect waters for use by anglers and sport fishing, or to protect waters for fish and aquatic habitats. Next slide, please. For the definitions of the beneficial uses, I'll be summarizing what is shown in our proposed amendment to Chapter 2 of the Basin Plan. And this is Enclosure 3 of your agenda. It's on pages stamped 6-21 to 6-23. The first new use, tribal tradition and culture, is for the uses of water that support the cultural, spiritual, ceremonial, or traditional rites or life ways of California Native American tribes. This can include navigation, ceremonies, fishing, gathering, consumption of fish, shellfish, vegetation, different aquatic materials. The definition also formally defines life ways as customs, practices, or art of a California Native American tribe. And it also formally defines a California Native American tribe. That definition includes both federally recognized California tribes, as well as non-federally recognized California tribes that are on lists maintained by the California Native American Heritage Commission. Next slide, please. The beneficial uses for tribal subsistence fishing, TSUB, and subsistence fishing, or SUB, are identical wording. Only one applies to tribes, one applies to everyone else. And this definition is for non-commercial catching or gathering, of fish, shellfish, and other natural aquatic resources for consumption to meet the needs for sustenance. And the definition is are in recognition of tribal or other populations that are likely to consume more or different types of fish than the average recreational angler in California or at different times or seasons. It also recognizes the higher human health risk from bioaccumulative contaminants in fish tissue, such as mercury. Next slide, please. The Basin Plan Amendment is adding only the definitions for the three new beneficial uses. Input from California Native American tribes and the subsistence fishing communities will be a vital part of the designation process. And designations of CUL or TSUB must be confirmed as appropriate by a California Native American tribe before we can finalize those designations. And this language about the confirmation by tribes was added to our Basin Plan Amendment since the draft of it was posted at the end of July. And designations of the new uses to specific water bodies will be considered under a future separate Basin Plan Amendment process. And we're still working out the details of the designation process, the how and the when, how we're going to design our approach to engage tribes, especially in these challenging COVID times, how we're going to comply with the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, and then how long the whole process could take. There's some early estimates that have been done by other regions that have put the designation processes for their regions on a 3 to 10 year timeline. So after we finish this current Basin Plan Amendment that adds the definitions, as we shepherd it through the next steps of state water board approval, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency approval, and Office of Administrative Law review process, that's when we'll start our main engagement with tribes on the designation process. And that will likely be in the first part of next year. Next slide, please. To summarize some of our outreach that we've done on this proposed amendment, it started with part of the 2018 Triennial Review. Our outreach to tribes in the region resulted in the majority of our Triennial Review comments that were in support of this project as a priority, and we received no comments in opposition. We did our due diligence with public noticing. We posted the notice of this hearing and related materials on the web. We emailed interested stakeholders using our subscription email services, our listserv. We also mailed the hearing notice to all the tribes in our region, and we published the notice in regional newspapers. Throughout the review period, staff were available to respond to any public inquiries. And at the end of our 30-day comment period, we received one comment on the proposed amendment. Next slide, please. The one comment that we received was from the United States Environmental Protection Agency, or US EPA. This is in closure 4, 8, 6, 31, and 32 in your agenda. In their comment letter, US EPA commended the board on including these new uses in their basin plan. And it also recommended that we add language to the proposed amendment about the requirement of tribal confirmation of any designations of these new uses to waters in the future. So in response to this comment, we added the recommended language to the proposed Basin Plan Amendment. And I did want to bring your attention to the late revision regarding this comment letter and response document. We redid our format of the document to comply with American Disabilities Act, ADA accessibility requirements, so that we could post it on our website. So the content of the response to comment document is essentially the same as the original response to comment document that you got with your agenda. Same comment, same responses, only the format changed. So next slide, please. The proposed amendment achieves in part one of the board's triennial review priorities. It's consistent with the beneficial use definitions and the directions that are in the state board's part two inland plan. Because it's an important step in recognizing and protecting cultural practices, traditional uses of water, and subsistence fishing in California, we recommend that the board adopt the resolution to add the new definitions for three beneficial uses as an amendment to Chapter 2 of the Basin Plan. But before you consider whether to adopt the proposed resolution, there's one minor change that is needed. Again, the resolution is Enclosure 1, Gate 6, 7, and 6, 8 in your agenda. And if you notice, number 8 of the proposed resolution states that today's hearing was held in a meeting in South Lake Tahoe. And although that is what we had originally planned, it is no longer correct as the hearing is being held during a video and teleconference meeting. So the proposed resolution needs to be changed accordingly. And I can propose this simple updated language at the request of the chair. Next slide, please. So I am happy to take any questions. Our contact information is on this last slide, and there's also a link at the bottom if you wanted to subscribe to our email subscription service to follow this item into the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Excuse me for the interruption. There is one additional revision to the resolution that we noticed. If you notice in the hereby section, it refers that the basin plan amendment is located in enclosure 1 of your packet. Currently, it is in enclosure 3. We would also be revising the resolution to refer to the proper location of that basin plan amendment, which would be enclosure 3.
Before we go to questions from board members, can you give us then all of the proposed revised language so that we have it before we start asking questions or doing anything else?
Yes, I can do that. I couldn't hear. Would you like me to do that now or after the conclusion?
No, I'd rather start with knowing what we're talking about in its entirety.
That sounds good. Just give me one moment as a default language. Thank you.
While you're doing that, I'll just comment that I never thought of myself before as a collector of fishes. It sounds dignified and rather scholarly, so I like that.
So the first revision, we have a backup slide. So AGP, if you could put that on the screen for the board members to view it. Thank you. So in number 8 of the resolution, we would be proposing to strike out the language South Lake Tahoe and add the language of video and teleconference meeting, as you can see on the screen before you. So that would be the first change. The second change, I don't have language to put before you, so I'll describe it. In the resolution, in the therefore be it resolved that, there's a number 1 and it reads, pursuant to Water Code Section 13240 et sec, the Lahontan Water Board, after considering the entire administrative record, including all oral testimony and written comments, adopts the amendment to the basin plan as set forth in enclosure 1. We would be removing the 1 and instead adding the number 3. So that it would read, adopts the amendment to the basin plan as set forth in enclosure 3. So those are the two suggested revisions from staff, and our recommendation is to adopt the resolution with those revisions.
Thank you very much. Let me ask board members if they have any questions of staff regarding the presentation and or any proposed revisions, starting with Mr. Diaz.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Cindy, that was a very good presentation, very clear and straightforward, so I have no questions. Thank you.
Thank
you. Dr. Horn.
I have no questions. I was going to say the same comment Keith just made later, but I second Keith's comment.
Mr. Jardine.
And I agree. I third those comments. It's a wonderful presentation.
Mr. Sandell.
I'm on board as well. Is it inappropriate to make a resolution?
It is not appropriate yet.
Okay, thank you.
Let me move on now to ask for any public comment with respect to item 6. I have no indication at this point that there is any member of the public who wishes to speak to this item. However, this is your opportunity. If you want to do that, please make yourself known at this time.
Board Chair, there's nobody in the Zoom meeting that would like to comment on this item.
Thank you very much. There being no public comment, I would now close this hearing and ask board members for any additional comment and or proposed action. And I will start with Mr. Sandell.
I propose that we accept the staff recommendation with the late revisions.
Is there a second?
I may second that. I would like to second that motion.
Thank you. Let me ask for comments, Mr. Diaz, if any, and a vote.
No questions. My vote is aye.
Thank you. Dr. Horn?
Before I vote, I just want to reiterate, thank you for the great job you did, Cindy, on this. Lots of little details you had to chase down, and you did them all. Great, clear, and comprehensive presentation to us. I first heard about these beneficial uses at a WQCC meeting. I can't remember what year it was. But the first region to use these beneficial uses is the North Coast, which makes a lot of sense. And once I heard about them, I was like, oh, we have to get those beneficial uses for the Lahontan region. So I'm thrilled that Lahontan is adopting this resolution and moving this in the process for adding these beneficial uses to our basin plan. Therefore, I vote aye.
Thank you. Mr. Jardine?
Yes, wonderful presentation and good hard work, and I vote aye.
Mr. Sandell?
Yes, thank you, Cindy. And Amy, thanks for your comments. I wasn't aware of some of that background, and I concur with all of it. I vote aye.
Thank you. Cindy, you are the best.
Thank you.
I vote aye as well.
And just for the record, Kimberly Cox is no longer in the meeting, so that is why there's no vote from her.
Thank you. Motion is carried. Moving now to item 7 on the agenda, which is a report regarding clean water program fundings.
Yeah, Board Chair, I'd like to introduce Leslie Loudon, and she is the Deputy Director for the Division of Financial Assistance, and we're pleased that we'll have a report from her on funding sources. So, Leslie, on to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, Lahontan Board members. I am Leslie Loudon. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Financial Assistance at the State Water Board. And the slides that I sent, they have quite a bit of detail, so I'm probably going to go over them fairly quickly and just give you a pretty high level overview, because we do administer quite a number of financial assistance programs. So my contact information is at the end of the presentation. If you have any follow-up questions or anything like that after we get done, I'm always happy to talk with anyone. So next slide, please. So here's an outline of the presentation that I'm going to go over. I've As I mentioned, we have a lot of different funding programs, so I've kind of broken them down into the various general funding categories that we have. I'll start out talking a little bit about our technical assistance program, then talk about drinking water, wastewater, groundwater, and then a couple of our other small programs that we have. Each of the programs has different requirements, eligibility requirements, legislative requirements, lots of different requirements. So it's quite confusing. And so some of the programs, most of our programs, we try to operate on a continuous basis where we are continuously accepting applications. But we do have a couple of programs that are competitive solicitations. So I'll try to identify those as we go along. Okay, next slide, please. So as I mentioned, many of our programs accept applications continuously, and we have a pretty robust technical assistance program to help our applicants in kind of navigating all these complex financial assistance programs we have. So we offer technical assistance to disadvantaged communities to help them with the application process. And in order to even help them get to that point, we have a little pre-application that's essentially a one-page questionnaire that they can fill out that helps us to focus them on exactly the type of information that we need to funnel them into the correct program. So we try to simplify things as much as we can for our disadvantaged communities, because really filling out the applications, it can be quite a bit of work. We do have, I'm on the next slide. I'm talking too fast. Could I go to the next? Oh, I think we skipped one. Back to the how to apply. Oh, all right. It looks like I've skipped one. Okay. All right, well, we'll go on to the drinking water. I was talking a little bit about the technical assistance, and we do have an online application program, our FAST program, which I know your staff, Cindy Wise, is quite familiar with, as she's been working with us for the last at least 18 years that I've been in financial assistance working with Cindy. So I will now start talking about our drinking water funding. And our main drinking water program is our state revolving fund program. And that program is funded by annual grants that we get from US EPA, as well as the state bond programs like Proposition 1 and 68. We offer both grants and below market interest rate loans for waste or for water, drinking water infrastructure projects. And each year the State Water Board adopts what's called an intended use plan. And that lays out all the criteria for the loan, the grant, how much funding is available, what the grant caps are and things like that. And so we adopt that each year in June of the year. Next slide, please. So I think you probably, hopefully, have heard about our newest program, which was our Safe and Affordable Funding for Equity and Resilience. And this was a program that was set up by SB 200 last year. And that provides us with up to $130 million annually to really help bring all of the water systems that are out of compliance into compliance with drinking water standards. And it allows us to fill a lot of gaps that we had. Most of our funding programs are focused on capital infrastructure projects. And the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Fund allows us to provide additional technical assistance. We can cover operations and maintenance costs, which for a lot of small disadvantaged drinking water systems, they just can't, even if we provide a capital project, they can't afford the cost of running the system. So this is going to give us the ability to fill those gaps. We can also fund administrators who can come in to actually take over and run these water systems, as well as providing interim drinking water supplies. We can provide bottled water or point of use, point of entry type projects, hauled water. So it really fills out kind of a big gap that we had in our funding program. And part of that program, we've been able to set up a drinking water for schools program to provide, of course, a lot of kids aren't in schools right now, but we were providing safe drinking water in schools for schools that either were their own drinking water system or were being provided with drinking water that didn't meet standards through their public water system. Okay, next slide, please. Again, another program that we had was our Drinking Water for Schools grant program that also allowed us to increase access to drinking water in schools. And we also have an emergency drinking water funding program. This was set up during the drought when we had a lot of systems that were actually running out of water. And we are able to do a lot of different emergency types of projects. Some of that was funded with general fund money, and some is funded with the cleanup and abatement account, which I'll talk about a little bit later. Next slide, please. So this just gives you a snapshot of the complete, what we are calling the SAFER funding program for drinking water. And so during this fiscal year, we actually have a total of just a little over $800 million available for drinking water projects. As you can see, most of the funding is for capital infrastructure type projects, and that includes our drinking water SRF state revolving fund. Portions of the state revolving fund can be given out as principal forgiveness, so that's like a grant, and then we have about $300 million a year that we can do in loans. And then the bond funds I mentioned, as well as some general fund appropriations. So when you add it all up, there's quite a bit of funding available for the drinking water program. We don't expect all of that to go out this year, but you know, we are trying to get quite a bit out. There's always quite a bit of pressure to get this money out and get it working for the projects that are so important to Californians. Next slide, please. So now I'd like to switch the focus and talk about the wastewater funding that we have. Our Clean Water State Revolving Fund is similar to the drinking water. It provides low interest loans as well as principal forgiveness. It's funded through capitalization grants from USEPA each year, as well as loan repayments and interest, and also some state bond funds. Our interest rate is 1/2 of the most current state's general obligation bond. And so yesterday we were notified our current interest rate is 1.1%. So pretty good financing option. We can fund projects for up to a 30-year loan repayment or the useful life of the asset that we are financing. A very, very popular program. We currently have a huge backlog of projects that are seeking funding. We have $7 billion worth of applications in-house. So because of that, we've had to start ranking our projects and essentially developing a fundable project list. So we have a scoring system that we use each year now to rank the projects and identify what will be funded in a given year. We always put our disadvantaged community systems on the fundable list, so they're automatically added to that list, and we continuously work with them, getting them technical assistance and helping them through the process, because it is a pretty rigorous application process. So we do run our small community wastewater grant in conjunction with the Clean Water SRF. And sometimes quite a few communities get both grant and loan fund in order to fully fund their project. And so the small community grant fund is, we get some principal forgiveness, about $50 million a year. And then also it's funded with some interest that we take off of loan repayments in order to have a continuous grant program. So as I mentioned, a lot of times our funding, it comes and goes depending on state bond funds and a number of things. So each year there's a little bit different amount. So we always ask people to check in with us. And we really recommend that our applicants talk to us, just come in, don't worry about the different funding sources. As you can see from my presentation, there are a lot of different funding sources. So we just say, bring us your project and let us figure out what the best financing package that we can put together is, rather than worrying about, am I applying for SRF? Am I applying for small community grant? Okay, next slide, please. We also have a water recycling funding program, and that is mainly funded through general obligation bonds. Essentially, all of our grant funding is already committed to projects. We might have a small amount left. And this one we typically run also in conjunction with our Clean Water SRF, because usually these types of projects are usually large infrastructure projects. which require both clean water SRF and potentially water recycling funding to make the project complete. Okay, next slide. All right, now switching to our groundwater funding. We have several different, quite a few groundwater funding programs. Prop 1 provided us with $800 million for cleaning up or preventing the cleanup of contamination of groundwater that serves as drinking water source. We've run two solicitations of the Prop 1. It is a competitive solicitation. It's not one of those continuous application programs. And so we will be having running our third and our last solicitation later this year. There's about $100 million left from that program. And then our underground storage tank cleanup fund, I heard you mention that as Patty started out her career with the water boards with underground storage tank cleanup fund. So you can tell how long that program has been around, and it does reimburse for corrective action costs at sites where the underground storage tanks have leaked. It also helps us to pay our staff costs for the staff that work in the underground storage tank program. Next slide, please. Prop 68 provided us with $74 million for groundwater funding that was focused on operations and maintenance. So as I mentioned, we typically have our funding is typically for capital projects, and a lot of these cleanup, groundwater cleanup projects have really high ongoing O&M costs. And so that is a new funding source for us to address O&M. And we just awarded some of the funding, but we do have some of that available. We're trying to focus it on disadvantaged communities and severely disadvantaged communities to help them with O&M costs of their drinking water or groundwater treatment systems. The site cleanup subaccount program, this is a kind of an exciting program. It's about 5 years old, and it's funded by the Underground Storage Tank Cleanup Fund also. But a portion of the funding, rather than going towards the cleanup of petroleum contamination from underground storage tanks, is that we can use this for other types of contaminated site cleanups. So we can use it for sites that really present kind of severe health and safety issues and groundwater quality issues, old dry cleaner sites and things like that. And we get about $20 million a year through this program. We work closely with the regional boards on identifying the sites and prioritizing them, because the site cleanup program has so many sites that the responsible parties cannot pay the cleanup, but you know, we have pretty limited amount of funding through this program, but it's a great program. Next slide, please. We have an orphan site cleanup fund, also a program that's under the umbrella of the UST cleanup fund. And this is for sites where the grantee, the recipient, did not cause the problem. These, as it indicates, orphan sites where, you know, they might have inherited this. It might be a brownfield site and they're not eligible for the underground storage tank cleanup fund, but this provides funding for those cleanups. Next slide, please. We also have our EAR account, which is our emergency abandon and recalcitrant account. And this funds the regional boards or the local oversight program to actually go out and do the cleanup of abandoned sites. And we have five sites that we're working on with the Lahontan board to get those sites cleaned up. And then I think it's our final program under the cleanup fund is our RUST program, replacing and removing, upgrading underground storage tanks. And this goes to help small businesses upgrade their tanks. And we're doing quite a bit right now with trying to get the single wall tanks removed before the deadline. Okay, next slide, please. We do have a stormwater grant funding program. This is also funded by bond funds, and we are just closed our solicitation for this round of funding. And it is our last right now, funding that we have for the stormwater grant program, although stormwater projects are eligible in the Clean Water State Revolving Fund program too, but those are for loans. Okay, next slide, please. We have our cleanup and abatement account, which I think you may be familiar with from funding some of the work up at Leviathan. You've gotten some cleanup and abatement account funding. It is our emergency funding source, and the funding is from fines and penalties. A lot of this money was appropriated during the drought for drinking water funding. So right now it is depleted and we are reserving it really for those emergencies. We've been funding some emergency fire response work with a cleanup and abatement account. If we get to the point that we have sufficient funds in that account, we would run a solicitation for other projects that are proposed by the regional boards. But right now we're reserving it for the real emergency projects. And then the non-point source program is an annual grant program that we run. It's funded through a grant from US EPA. It's a fairly small grant program. It's about $4 million a year, but these are really important projects. And I'm sure that we've funded several of these projects in your region. I'd have to ask Cindy exactly how many, but I'm sure she's aware of those. Okay, next slide, please. So for more information, we do have email subscription services for pretty much all of these programs. And so this, you can go to our website. And really, our website has a lot of information on all the programs. There's a wealth of information. It's kind of hard to navigate sometimes, our website, I will admit. And so, but the subscription services are great. They'll notify you of any upcoming workshops or solicitations or things like that. All right, next slide, please. Now I just wanted to kind of close with going over, highlighting some of the projects in your region. I think that you're probably all aware of the large projects that we've been had going on at the Y in South Lake Tahoe. And this started out funded with the cleanup and abatement account back in 2015, where the regional board did some initial work using cleanup and abatement funding to try to identify some sources. And then more recently, we've awarded a large SCAP grant to the regional board. It's our biggest grant of $4.6 million for the comprehensive investigation that's been going on out there. And there's another $379 million pending for the regional board to continue that. At the same time, we've been working with the Lukens Brothers Water Company, and they have a $2.1 million grant from Prop 68 to add granular activated carbon to one of their production wells. And then also South Tahoe Public Utilities District has been doing work in the area using a Prop 1 grant to do a feasibility study on some other treatment options for the PCE contamination in that area. We also have a project, a Clean Water State Revolving Fund loan, with some principal forgiveness for South Tahoe to install water meters. And so, next slide. And then just a couple other projects that may be of interest to you. We've got a project for a new pump station in Markleyville. We're working on planning and design of a surface water treatment drinking water program at Donner Summit. And then we're working on a reclaimed water distribution system in the Hesperio Water District. So next slide. So that is all I had for you. I know I went pretty fast over it and I didn't give a lot of details because, as I mentioned, each program has different specific requirements. But I am happy to take any questions that you have now, or there's my contact information. You can contact me directly and I can point you in the right direction for any follow-up questions that you have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before I get to board members, I want to see if there's anyone, if we have anyone from the public who wishes to speak to this item or has any questions.
Board member, there is nobody from the public who wishes to speak on this item.
Thank you very much. Questions, comments, Mr. Diaz? Mr. Diaz? Little glitch here for a second. Dr. Horn, I'll come back to Mr. Diaz.
Thank you. I have a quick question, which is, I was curious what the criteria are for a DAC to be considered a small DAC.
Okay, well, they're different in the different programs. So, of course, the legislature keeps us on our toes by having different definitions. But on the small community wastewater side, a small disadvantaged community is 20,000 residents. And on the drinking water side, it's 3,300 connections or 10,000 people.
Which one was that?
That's the drinking water.
Oh, okay. So 30,000 connections, is that what you said?
So 3,300 connections, okay, on drinking water or 10,000 people.
Okay.
And then on the wastewater side, it's 20,000 population.
Okay.
But also recognizing this difference, the State Water Board has adopted what we call an expanded small community in the drinking water side. So that goes up to 20,000 to try to kind of align, because even really, you know, at that size, most water systems can't afford these large projects. So,
right,
you know, the smaller communities are, you know, certainly eligible for 100% grant, a small disadvantaged community, depending on their water rates. And as I mentioned, that's established each year by the board in their intended use plan and our fund expenditure plan. And then, you know, the expanded small communities also then can be eligible for grant. Before they weren't. And so we were recognizing they just can't afford those projects.
Right. That's great. I was aware of this process before I was ever a board member. I helped a nonprofit apply for a 319 grant. Oh. And Cindy held my hand through the whole thing. It was a hugely complicated process. Mm-hmm. And so I know Cindy's been doing great work in our region all these years. Mm-hmm. And chasing down all the money that we may be eligible for. But my mind is sort of swimming with all these different pots that are available. And I'm just going to throw this question out there. Are there any of these pots that you think the Lahontan region could take more advantage of than it does, given that we're sort of a special region? Half of our region is dependent on groundwater and desert, and then half of our region is mountainous. So we have a lot of diversity here and a lot of small, poor communities as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would have to say that I think that you actually as a region have done really, really well on the funding side. You know, through Cindy's leadership and your other staff have really, you know, have really worked with us and taken advantage of, you know, especially the groundwater work that we've been doing. You know, we have the projects down in Barstow. You know, so they've been, you know, really great about working with us to identify projects. You know, 15 years ago, we had a lot more funding for watershed and non-point source type projects, but we just haven't had that funding recently through the bonds. It's mainly gone to the IRWM program through the Department of Water Resources. So we haven't had those types of projects, and the non-point source program is a really small program. You know, and so I think that you have done pretty well on the groundwater side. Maybe not quite as well on, say, the small community drinking water. And a lot of that focus has been, you know, the Central Valley and the Central Coast type regions. But, you know, if there are, we now through the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water are looking at all of the systems statewide that are out of compliance, as well as private wells. We haven't had money in the past to work with private well owners.
And so the State Water Board is doing a needs analysis right now where we're also looking at state small water systems, which we don't actually regulate, you know, the ones that are the 5 to 14 connections. So we don't have a good idea even on where those are. So we're working on identifying them, identifying what their issues are. And then we have this, you know, the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Fund. So I think that that's going to really help some of the more rural communities as we start to identify those, and that we actually have funding sources now for well owners that may have contamination in their wells that we can put treatment on or hook them up to water systems. So I think as we roll this program out, you know, we'll be doing more outreach and more getting more information out to your region.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Jardine.
No questions now, but thank you for your contact information. You'll hear from me.
Mr. Sandell.
Thank you for this really comprehensive overview. I had no idea there was such a complex network of funding sources. I'm looking forward to seeing whether we can find new sources for some of the people within our region that need them.
Yeah, I think overall we do probably about $2 billion a year in financial assistance at the board. So there's a lot going on.
Thank you. Mr. Diaz?
Yes, I apologize for losing my audio earlier. Good presentation. Leslie, I have one question on one of your earlier slides. You indicated that the South Tahoe Public Utility District received funding for water meter replacements. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered if other communities are also eligible for such funding.
Yes. We do quite a bit of water meter installation and replacement through both the drinking water SRF funding as well as the clean water. It's really a conservation measure. We find that once people are metered, they tend to conserve a bit more water. So we can fund them through either program.
Okay, thank you. No more questions.
I just want to thank you for your presentation, first of all, and perhaps more importantly, for all the good work you've done along with Cindy for the people in our region. I hope we'll be able to work with you more closely and more effectively even in the future. So thank you for taking the time to be with us this morning. It's greatly appreciated.
You're welcome. We, you know, unfortunately I couldn't come up and be in person, but you know, we have had workshops and things like that in the region. Hopefully when things open up, we'll be able to start doing that again.
Well, we thank you for your continued assistance.
Sure.
Thank you very much, everyone. I want to thank Ms. Barrett for keeping me on track and on focus this morning. I want to thank our staff again for the wonderful work that they are doing for us in this really, really difficult set of circumstances and situations. I can barely keep myself functioning in my house. I don't know how anybody does full-time employment and does it to the high level that you all do. Mr. Plasiak, thank you for keeping us afloat, for the work you're doing to keep us going. Appreciate it greatly. Thank you to the board members. Now we can all go back and put on our sweats. See you in November.
Thanks, Peter.
Take care, everybody.
Take care, everybody.
Hey.
Be safe.
Take care.